we're back to your regularly scheduled shenanigans this week. This time of year, we get a chance to talk about all kinds of different activities we enjoy. Like next week, you'll be regaled with tales from the Wasissa River trip and serenaded with some wonderful tunes provided by Ben and the local band. But this week, we're talking wine. Now, I know plenty of you are probably like me and would sooner reach for a nice cold beer over a bottle of red, or maybe your mind shifts to bourbon when you think of a relaxing glass. Well, I'm here to tell you, don't sleep on a good glass of wine either, especially with a nice wild game meal. So sit down with us, and we talk wine with Mark from the Wisdom Selection, the only wine marketed to outdoors men, and if you're like me, you'll likely learn a thing or two. I can't let you slip into this episode just yet, though, because we're still running our suppressor giveaway. If a suppressor isn't exactly your game, no big deal. I'll make you a trade of the value of the suppressor and stamp, and you can spend the money however you please, and everything else still goes to benefit vets and first responders through Tin Can. Click the link in the podcast description and get your tickets before they're gone. One more thing, though. Get over to hasmore.net and get yourself a silent seat. Deer season will be here before you know it, and you'll need one. Use code UPO15 at checkout for 15% off your order. Let's get into the show. I'm your host, Will Krebs, and this is the Under Pressure Outdoors Podcast. So let me start this off. Let me introduce everybody I got around here. I got Tyke actually in the studio all the way from California.
Yep.
And we've got Mark D'Ambrosio from the Woodsman Selection. And we're talking wine and wild game. Mark, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in the wine business.
Yeah, man, it's a pretty interesting thing for a guy with my background to get into wine. Pretty much all started, I was teaching long range shooting at a 5-star ranch in Colorado. And one of the things the owner wanted to do was try and market his ranch differently. So he brought out his marketing specialist and he came up with this bright idea to shoot a wine bottle. And I was like, oh, that's glorious. Put a bullet in a bottle of wine. And he was like, no. We need to shoot a wine bottle. And I was like, no, that's ridiculous. Like, put a bullet in a bottle of wine. And, the owner had four wineries. So long story short, I went home and I started melting glass and putting bullets into them. And I was like, oh, this is damn cool. This looks good. And I've always had an appreciation and passion for wine. And so as a means to try and reach more people to get them into the outdoors, that's kind of been my lifelong passion, is getting more people into the outdoors. I started this wine brand to give people the wine to celebrate, those moments that you're spending outdoors, but then I also give them the adventures that go with it. So on the back of the bottles, the bullet and the 550 cord, that's cool on the bottle, it's great, but it's just the visual thing, and I wanted to give them more than just wine. So I put a QR code on the back, and it takes them to a list of different adventures. It pre-plans the adventures out for them, gives them a gear list, tells them what to do. And then from there, I started, taking the wine that I know is damn good wine and putting that into the bottles and, kind of bringing the whole package together.
Yeah, you've got so what sets your wine, and I know a lot of hunters sit here and think, we think about having a drink with a wild game meal. I mean, if you're like me, it's mainly beer. And I'm not just saying I'm going to go pick up the regular light beer from the store and that's all I'm going to drink. I do like, you get some red ales and darker beers and you can get into all kinds of crazy different types of beer. We've sat here and literally talked beer and drank 10 or 15 different beers from a local brewer one night. And there's just a different flavor notes and all that stuff. But wine is, and I wish Jim was here, but it wasn't something that I was really accustomed to, per se. And then, you know, he told us, he was like, no, trust me, you need to have this with the wine. It makes it better. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure it does. That's what everybody tells you. And then you ate the food. You're like, this is good. And then you drink some wine and you take another bite. You're like, that is better. There's something, and I don't know, and maybe you can explain it. What is it about wine that makes food taste different?
Yeah, so it all depends. Like, if you have, say you're eating something like, I'm eating some beaver pulled pork sandwiches right now. If I wanted to pair wine with this, which I don't have wine because it's 4:30 in the afternoon right now, I'm just not in the mood for drinking any wine. But if I was to pair this with something, I'm going to pair it with something that's real dry. So those fatty meats, like your pigs, beef, certain cuts of beef especially, you want to pair that with something that's a drier wine. It'll kind of take those fats that are on your tongue and still in your mouth and kind of get rid of them. And then you'll be able to start over again with that next bite. At the end of the day, if you don't like that dry red wine, it's not going to make it any better. You'll have that feeling and sensation, but you also have to like the way the wine tastes.
Right.
When you look into the wine world and you start talking about sommeliers, oh, how do I say this without offending 99% of the wine world?
Well, for starters, what is a sommelier?
So a sommelier is an expert in wine and all things related to wine. But let's go back to like back in the day, what a sommelier was is a glorified drinker of a beverage to make sure the king didn't die. Right. So, okay. How did it go from somebody that like, you may or may not die drinking this to, a really prestigious thing. If I'm being honest, I think a big percentage of the wine world's full of shit. So, you know, it. People say that, you know, and I own a wine business, and the reality is this. You could have a $5,000 bottle of wine, you could have a $5 bottle of wine. Some of those $5 bottle of wine people, they may prefer, or the $5,000 bottle of wine people may prefer the $5 bottle. And if you sit there and you do blind taste tests with people, it's been proven over and over and over again that wine is not that complicated. People make it out to be complicated to build themselves up. There are some things you need to know about wine as far as like going into it. And it's very simple stuff, but like everything in life, somebody came along, they put this standard, they tried putting a standard to it, and at the end of the day, it's personal preference.
Right.
You may like a wine that's a little bit sweeter. You may like a wine that's a little bit more dry. You may like to have a longer finish on a wine. That feeling you get inside your mouth whenever you're done drinking it and it kind of lingers there, you may like that. You may like a bolder wine, or you may like a smoother wine. So when it comes down to it, it's like, all right, price point. If I drink a $5 bottle of wine, yes, I can taste it tastes cheap, right? But the difference between a good quality $20 bottle of wine and a $500 bottle of wine, not much of a difference. So there's a lot of people that argue with me on that one, but yeah.
You keep using terms like dry and all that. Is there a rule of thumb? Like if I'm standing in the store and there's racks and racks of wine, I'm looking for a dry wine or something like that. Is there a rule of thumb where I can get started there as far as knowing, are there certain types of wine that are naturally drier than others? And how does that work?
Yeah, so this is the advice I give to people when they're going out there and they're trying wines. If you go to a grocery store and you look down the wine aisle, you're going to see more options than anything else in that store. You know, there's hundreds of options of wine when you go into a grocery store. A very tough business to be in. And the reality is all of these wines change every year. So every vintage is changing. The best way to get to know what kind of wine that you may like is just by picking up a glass or picking up a bottle, taking it home, drinking it, and then comparing it to another wine. Doing blind taste tests is one of the best ways to do it. But like starting off with like a Cabernet Sauvignon, starting off with something like that, depending on what kind of meats you're eating and everything, but that's not a bad wine to start with. It's a real easy one. It's one of the most well-known red wines out there. But the bottom line is you don't need to get too picky about it. You just need to find something that you enjoy. And so when someone picks up a bottle of the Woodsman Selection and they taste it, I don't get butthurt if they don't like it. It happens with any wine brand out there. What I'll do is I'll find them another one, because that's why we don't carry the, you know, same exact wines. We carry different varietals, and I'll find something else that they may like. So, you know, yeah, it's a very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's got turned into a very prestigious, pretentious, bougie world where people make it fancy. And at the end of the day, my goal is to show people, hey, you purchase this bottle, you know you're going to get a damn good bottle of wine. If you don't like it, try something else. But, you know, these are the $20 to $30 bottles of wine. Now, what makes the difference in price? I mean, that's how the wine's made. Is it exclusive? Where are the grapes coming from? But here's the thing. You can grow grapes in Texas and have wine that tastes just as good as grapes from France. But when people hear that word Texas, they think automatically, fuck no, I'm not drinking this. Right? So they think, okay, well, France has the best wines. And I think it's really hilarious, because look at where France sits on a map compared to, say, Sonoma, Napa, where we grow a lot of grapes.
What are they, afraid Ted Cruz touched it or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm near wine country in Shenandoah, up in like near Ione and stuff like that. They grow a lot of, there's a lot of wineries and stuff where, and Murphy's and stuff. There's a lot of vineyards and wineries around where I'm from. And so this culture has been something that I've seen, but not really participated in. It's pretty interesting to go to tastings in these places and see some pretensions and bougie.
Oh, you know what the best thing for me in this industry is I went from the Marine Corps, spent 10 years in the Marine Corps as a recon Marine, a scout sniper. I got out, I started my own survival business, teaching shooting and survival. And then I got into the wine world, and I went from people I love to what am I dealing with right now? kind of the complete opposite personality type than I'm used to. And at first it irritated me like hardcore, because I'm dealing with people that are talking to me a certain way. And every single time they look at you like you're ignorant, and they look at you like you're not good enough. And so real quickly, I switched my mindset, and I fuck with people now. I mean, I absolutely love going into this world, and, you know, I just did a wine tasting Monday, and, you know, you wear regular clothes, you wear a baseball hat. A lot of people are showing up in ties and suits, and, you know, I'm sitting there like I'm just a regular guy. It's about the wine. It's not about the way I dress, right? They're sitting there taking the wine, and some people will swish it around in their mouth. And I'm like, well, shit, whenever I drink something, I'm not sitting there swishing around my mouth unless it's like mouthwash, right? And then they'll spit it out into a container as to not, you know, you're not trying to get too drunk while you're out there tasting different wines. But it's And every wine brand out there says the same thing. Oh, we're not pretentious. And then you listen to them talk and you're like, you sound pretty pretentious. So when someone grabs a bottle of my wine, I love it because they sit there and they start tasting it. Like, oh, it's got notes of I can smell notes of cedar in this. And they start going down, and I'm like, I don't really care what you have notes of right now, right? That's great. That's cool. That's what you're pulling out of it. But like, do you enjoy it? Yes. Great. That's all that matters, right? But people try to pull apart the wine and they try to dissect it. And at the end of the day, it's like, this is a celebratory drink. This is something that is a relaxing drink. If you're drinking it with food, sure, you can set yourself up for success, but like if you're drinking it by itself, it should be great drank just by itself. And going back to that tasting, we'd have people come up to us and we just don't play that game. We don't play it at all. So we made our wine brand about something that's truly important. The whole sole purpose of wine is to bring people together. And so you look on any wine page out there, and they'll throw the word adventure into it. Go on the adventure of this wine into the vineyards. And I look at that, and I just kind of laugh because adventure to me means something different than it means to them. It is about family, but at the end of the day, this is the people that are putting the hard work into the wine, in my opinion, are the farmers. Those are the guys that are taking the time to grow those grapes to perfection. And from there, everything else is pretty simple, and it should be considered. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to take the pretentiousness truly out of the wine world. Like, the 70% of wine drinkers are women. And I don't know if you guys have looked at the Woodsman Selection brand, but it's got a very manly vibe to it, that's for sure. And
I have your page pulled up next to you here on the screen, and it's not a it doesn't appear to be marketed towards women, and
yeah.
it really appears to be marketed towards specifically right now. You talked about the Cabernet Sauvignon, and I'm looking at the Hunter, which is the 2021 Cabernet, and you've got the, like you said, the 550 quarter on the neck and the bullet on the front of the bottle. And you talk about taking an adventure through a vineyard, and I feel like that would go well paired with a 28 gauge, because I bet there's plenty of rabbits in a place like that, you know. I think about that, like just any kind of agriculture, man, we're gonna have rabbits in there, some small game, some doves, some stuff like that. But everything you've got here, and I mean, you break it down into the adventure, let's see what the adventure box subscription, which I get to switch over, comes with all kinds of stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, so those things, the entire brand is about getting people into the outdoors, and it's about showing them it's not that complicated to do these things, right?
Right.
So it's not marketed towards men. It's just marketed towards people that love the outdoors and
Right.
people that want to go out there and challenge themselves. But yeah, the adventure box, when you own a company, you're just always trying to make it better. You're trying to truly get your purpose out there and make that purpose happen, not just make money. Making money is a byproduct of, giving people what they want, but to give people what they want and what has meaning behind it. And so the adventure box is that subscription. That was a fun way. Everybody has a wine club, and they have, you can get 4 bottles of wine a month, 6 bottles of wine, every 4 months, but like, or every 3 months. But like, I wanted to do something where, hey, here's one of our adventures, the Backcountry Cookout Adventure. Here's everything you need besides the food, obviously. Go into the backcountry and cook a meal in the backcountry. And as you guys know, if you go out into the outdoors and you bring anything into the outdoors and cook it, it's that much better.
I agree.
Cooking it over natural wood, cooking it over an open flame, it's that much better. And you have a experience and memories that are created. from that. Cooking it in your house, yeah, you can cook some damn good food, but it would be that much better if it was in the outdoors.
Agreed.
It's a bit mundane to cook a good meal in at home. I mean,
Yeah.
that's where you're used to cooking a good meal. And cooking in the outdoors, especially in a remote backcountry setting, poses its own set of challenges. I can't just turn to the sink and wash off a dish that I dropped on the ground. You don't have those those types of things, and I don't know. All the easy things you have in your kitchen, it does pose quite a bit. And I mean, we do some stuff. We got into the habit of hunting on public land. When we're whitetail deer hunting, if you leave the spot you parked in the morning, if you plan on coming there in the afternoon, like you're going to leave to go get lunch. Somebody's going to be there when you get back. They're waiting on you to pull out. So we got into the habit of we would pack a camp stove and all kinds of stuff, and we're cooking steaks or making breakfast in a cast iron skillet. Last year, we cooked up some squirrel, fried some squirrel in bacon grease. But before we went straight to the bacon grease in the cast iron skillet, my brother had it in. Had kind of marinated in a marinade he made, and man, that was the best squirrel I think I've had in a long time. But we're always bringing something, cooking stuff, and try to keep it wild game related while we're in the field, because it's not fun to me anyway. To yeah, man, let's go to the woods and have beef.
Bologna sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't come here to eat beef. I came here to kill meat and eat what I killed. So I always try to bring venison or some other wild game. I've got some, like I brought pheasant legs from other trips and stuff like that. And I find it making stuff out of the parts that people throw away. We went on a tower shoot, which by no means is hunting, but it was for a school fundraiser. And man, it's not hunting, but we had a dang blast, right? And when the guys are cleaning the birds and they're bagging up just the breast and giving them back to people. And I walked in that cleaning shack and was like, "Hey, what are you doing with the legs?" Like, throwing them in the garbage. I was like, "Uh-uh, not today." We had probably 15 bags just full of pheasant legs. They're ready to toss out. We got our few little breasts from, I think everybody got like six birds from that. But I had probably 20 or 30 birds worth of legs, all individually packaged and frozen when I got home. Not gonna let that
Yeah.
go to waste. That's good meat.
Was it pheasant or what was it?
It was pheasant, yeah.
Yeah, man, it kills me when I go to places and they do that. They're so used to, because that's really just all about the killing
Right.
at that point. And so, am I saying you need to take the bones from that bird and use them? No, I'm not saying you need to do that, but like the difference between taking your, an extra 5 minutes to even pluck a pheasant doesn't take that long. And if you're doing a bunch of them, they should have a, what is it called? A deep plucker or a plucker or some shit like they have for
Yeah, it's like
ducks.
a washing machine drum. You drop it down in there and they just spin around
Yeah,
until all
they
the
should have
feathers fall off.
something
Yeah.
like that at that location to get that off. And the dip, what you're going to have, like, it may not be the biggest piece of meat you're used to, like you are with a store-bought chicken. But like those leg meat, that is delicious. And it's a different way you can prepare that when you have the skin on and you have all the fat on that bird. And it's something else when you go around and you watch people do that. And like you said, going into the outdoors and finding your own food and cooking it, that is by far like that's been the most amazing experience of my life. I was on a loan on season 7, and so I was afforded the opportunity to go out there and live off the land as long as I could with 10 items. And the best part about that was I got to hunt, trap, fish for 44 days straight, nobody messing with me. And I got to take whatever that land had to offer, and I got to live. I mean, I'm talking the difference between a lake trout that was frozen versus a lake trout that, because in the very beginning, you couldn't freeze any of the lake trout. You had to cook them up right away, or you had to preserve them by drying them out. And or smoking them. But I would cook fresh lake trout every single day, and it was unreal. And then the temperature started dropping, it got cold enough, and I froze that lake trout. And I put a piece on the rock and seared it up, and I ate it, and I was like, that is completely different. Not even close to the same taste profile as that fresh out in the wilderness, you know, not frozen lake trout. And so, you know, I've sucked the brains out of a fox skull before. I've freaking eaten just about every single part of an animal that you can possibly eat. Some parts that I'm like, I'll never do that again, you know, just old Rocky Mountain oysters. Like, I don't need to eat those all the time. You know what I mean? But finding those animals that people look at like they're disgusting, like squirrels, are amazing. Oh, incredible. Man. They're delicious.
Yeah.
We're living in a world of people that look at squirrel and they look at you like you're crazy, like you're going to get some kind of disease. I just made my first beaver sandwich, the pulled pork beaver sandwich, and there, no shit, is no difference between this and pulled pork. It has no gamey taste to it. And then I ask people, I'm like, hey, you eat, you know, crab, don't you? They're like, yeah. I'm like, all right, what's a crab eat?
They're
garbage from the ocean floor. I'm like, okay, yeah, well, they're not eating real garbage, but yeah, I get it. Same thing with catfish, right? It's like, oh, they'll eat anything. Well, what's a beaver eat? It eats the damn cambium layer off of trees. So it's like, it's only eating the best stuff out there, and it shows. And I'll take wines and I'll pair wines, and I'll have wine. I don't want to say I'll pair wines with these different wild games, but I'll drink wine with these different wild game. Any kind of fish, I'm usually drinking like a Sauvignon Blanc. It's a little bit buttery, more of a buttery tasting white wine. But if a Cabernet Sauvignon, or if you want something a little bit sweeter, some type of red blend, anything you want to pick, you pick it up. If you like that wine, eating it with this wild game is going to be delicious. And, you know, I almost 9 times out of 10, I drink my wine out of either a wooden cup that I've made, or I'll drink it out of a whiskey glass. I'll drink it out of something other than a fucking wine glass. You know, sit there and swirl it around for 13 minutes, you know, and you're watching how the legs come down, and you're smelling it. And I'm like, okay, you're getting a real appreciation for this, and that's good. And you're learning a lot about this, but you can do that one time and get to know that wine. So for me, I like to put it in something else. If it needs to air out for a little bit, if I need to open that wine up, then I'll open it up. I'll let it breathe for a while, but it doesn't need to be in a wine glass to be able to do that. So
what does all that mean? I mean, I hear it said, and you're talking about the legs coming down and all that. What do you mean by that?
You know, some people look at that and they'll be like, okay, you can tell if a wine's got good legs or not, if it's a good wine. I'm like, no, you can't. It doesn't mean if a wine's got, if it's good or not, because it's got legs. But if it's just a matter of the sugar content, of how much sugar's in that wine. And so really, if you like a sweeter wine, your legs may look different than other ones. But there are some wines where the real cheap, inexpensive wines, where you may not have legs at all. The wider, it might be just evaporate completely instead of running down the glass. The aerating the wine out, that is something that you can do to your wine to change that flavor profile drastically. So if you pick up a wine and you start to drink it and you're like, ooh, that's really strong, you can take an, even if you wanted to, don't just take the cork off and let it sit there. Go ahead and pour it into a different container. And you can do it a couple of times. All you're doing is you're introducing more oxygen into that wine. And oxygen is an enemy to wine if you get too much, but it's also essential in getting the right flavor that you want. So the right quality.
That's interesting. You hear a lot of that talk about the notes and how it, this changes it and that changes it. A lot of it coincides with whiskey.
Yep.
People can be very pretentious about their whiskey as well.
And, you know, at the end of the day, the reason why people are doing this is because there's 9,000, there's more than that, different types of wine out there, right? And they've got to tell their consumers something different. The reality is this, with my brand, we've got damn good wine. Great. Buy a bottle, try it out just like you try any other wine. I guarantee people usually will like it, and if not, they can find something that we have that they like. And if not, go to a different brand. Absolutely. Nothing wrong with that. Give us your feedback. Tell us what you're looking for, what kind of wines you like. But we leave it at that. We tell them, hey, it's damn good wine, and try it, enjoy it. Because the more people we get drinking wine, the better, in my opinion. There's a large group of men out there, well, large, I guess, you know, just men in general, that aren't big wine drinkers. And the ones that are, you know, they've got a stick up their ass half the time, and they're sitting there acting like they know everything. And those people are keeping my buddies away from drinking wine. Why the fuck do I want to take part in that type of environment, right? And I don't ever want to sound like that when I'm drinking wine. You hear those people talk and you're like, I don't ever want to sound like that.
Yeah. It comes with people who, I guess you could say, wine snobs. Not want to offend anybody. You're a wine snob. That's great. But you're still, I mean, they're in every facet of a hobby or something people enjoy. There's somebody who, a purist, you know, you get into a pit. See, with duck hunting, all I shoot is mallards. Like, that's great. I've never seen a wild mallard. I live in Florida, man. Like, I've seen quote unquote mallards. They got a green head, but that's a golf course duck.
Yeah. Like,
they don't make it this far south. But you want to come down here and shoot some wood ducks? I got wood ducks, buddy. You talk about something that's good plucked whole. That's the only way to eat wood ducks, in my opinion. But
yeah, and you know, duck hunting is a great example, because like, what's the whole purpose of duck hunting? Like, versus other types of hunting, the best thing about it is that you can be in the blind with your buddies shooting the shit, cooking a fucking burger while you're hunting, spending that time with the guys.
Yeah, it's fellowship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. I suck at duck hunting. I'm like the worst person out there ever with a shotgun.
I challenge you. I've
done it one time. And man, I'll stick with my bow, my self-made bow in the woods for elk, because with as many ducks as I shot, it would take me years to get enough meat as compared to an elk. But like the time that I had with those guys in that blind, it was hilarious. You know, it was fun. It was a different style of hunting. And this wine brand is like duck hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it is, you don't, yeah, and it's not, this ain't the high tech duck blind type situation I'm talking about. I'm talking about a piece of metal buried in the field somewhere, and that's all you got, right? There's no cooking grate out here with this brand.
You're talking, if you're talking to the Florida boys, you're talking a 14 or 16 foot John boat with a duck blind made out of conduit, with some camo netting you bought off of Amazon and a bunch of palm fronds.
Yep.
And that's plenty of 100% DEET.
And that's all you need, you know? And it's the same thing with wine. All you need is a damn bottle opener, you know? You need a way to pour the wine into something. And then just, you know, and enjoy it. And figure out what you like when you're drinking around other people. And the best way to do that is to do blind taste tests with yourself or with other people. But you got to do a blind taste test the right way, because I'm a firm believer that you can dictate if someone's going to like the wine or not with the presentation of the bottle, with what somebody else says, with the aromas of the wine, obviously, you know, that's a big part that goes into it. But like, if you want to do a true blind taste test, the aromas are going to have to be a part of it, but you're not going to be able to see it because they're already going to start making assumptions when they see it. And
Right.
that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about taste. So what you'll do is you'll take, say you got four different wines. I like to put it, I'll put some tape either on the bottom of a glass, or I'll put the or put it on cups, really, and I'll write what the wine it is, and then they're the same looking cups, and I'll pour it. If it's a red wine, I'm going to pour four different, say, Merlots. I'll pour four different Merlots into four different cups that all look the same, except I'll label the bottoms of them, and then I'll mix them around a whole bunch, you know, until I get confused when I'm doing it myself, and then I'll go ahead and I'll smell it. I'll smell it. I'll be like, okay, and I'll find out which one the smell I like the most. And I'll set those to the side. And then I'll have somebody else take it and look at it, and they'll write it down. Hey, I like that smell. Okay, give me all of them back again. I'll take them, and then I'll try them. And a fun thing to do is, like, if you do blind taste tests with wine, is okay, you find out which ones you like, and that's fun to do it again and see if you get the same result. A lot of times you're getting mixed results, right? And why? Because you're drinking alcohol. You're introducing something into your body that's, you know, making your decisions not the best. And the longer you do it, the worse your decisions get. You can make any alcohol taste good if you're six glasses deep. But like from the very beginning, when you do that, and you also have to realize that everything that you add to that experiment, like, hey, I was eating pineapple 30 minutes prior. Or, you know, what did I have prior? Did I brush my teeth prior? What am I doing in between glasses of wine? So at the end of the day, if you do some blind taste tests and you're like, ooh, I like the way this tastes, and you spend all this time doing it, and you get hooked on that one wine, you're like, okay, that's my wine. That's my jam right there. The next vintage, the next year, may taste totally different. May not be your jam anymore. May taste slightly different, but you just don't like it. So, yeah, it's a interesting thing, but I do think doing blind taste tests is amazing. I did a blind taste test with some real bougie wine drinkers. He actually, my investor and his family. This is how I got them to invest in my brand. They're bougie, right? They're buying those $1,000, $1,500 bottles of wine, and I told them, hey, his mom tried the Hunter bottle. And she was like, don't like Mark's wine. And I was like, huh, really? I was like, that's a damn good wine. I'd be surprised if she doesn't like it. I was like, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. Go ahead and tell your mom, what's her favorite wine? He's like, oh, Scarecrow. We love Scarecrow. Scarecrow is like a real cult following wine. It's about 1300 bucks to 1000 bucks a bottle.
Oof.
And I was like, awesome. Bring that bottle of Scarecrow. I'll bring my, and it's Cab Sauv. I'll bring my Hunter bottle, and I brought two other bottles of wine. So she had four to choose from. And, or actually, she only did three. She only had three to choose from. She canceled one out immediately. And, you know, she sat there and she started swirling it around. And she's like, Mark, yeah, I just, you know, I didn't like your wine, blah, 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 blah. I was like, hey, no worries. Do this taste test. So she did. And she's, it's a 7 minute video of her just sitting there looking at it, smelling it. And at the end of the day, she chose my Hunter bottle. And she's like, this one I'm going to bed with. I'm going to bed with this wine right here. I was like, oh, that's good. That's a $32 bottle of wine right there. And she was like, are you? And she looks at her son, who's the investor in this. And he's like, Mom, you turned your nose to that wine when you knew it was Mark's wine, but now you're saying you love it.
Right.
And I love doing that with people because the price of the wine, it's just you're not really going to justify it just because you're put it's just because it's got a heavy price tag. People, some people just want to pay $1,000 for a bottle of wine. And how many people pay $1,000 for a bottle of wine and say it's disgusting?
I'd imagine none of them.
Yeah.
Bad choice.
I would hope not.
Let's take a break real quick.
Yeah.
Thank you. The Under Pressure Outdoors podcast is brought to you in part by Hang Free. With a mission to provide top quality products for the best possible price, Hang Free believes that the saddle hunting experience is worth more than money. They create both tried and true products as well as debut new items to the saddle hunting community, creating a community of saddle hunters that don't have to break the bank to participate in the hobby that they love. Do yourself a favor and join the Hang Free family this hunting season. They truly have everything you need. Don't forget to use offer code UPO10 at checkout for 10% off your order at hangfree.co.
So what makes a bottle of wine worth $1,000 besides just demand?
The only thing that's going to make a bottle worth $1,000 is if it's worth it to that person. Meaning, not only do they like the way the wine tastes that much, but they think it's that rare. So, for instance, if you make anything exclusive, naturally, people are going to want that. Scarecrow, for example, that's got a cult following behind it. And when you get that kind of following with your customers, yeah, absolutely, they're willing to pay $1,000 for that bottle of wine. Now, it's going to be more than likely, let's say it's a Cab Sauv, it's going to be a darker wine. It's going to have a bold body to it. It's not going to be that sweet of a wine. When you start thinking expensive wines, you start thinking the opposite of the inexpensive wines. There's a lot of inexpensive wines have a lot of sugar content and they're sweeter and people are addicted to sugar. So they think it's good. But the realities of how that wine is made, is it worth $1,000? In my opinion, no. What are they doing different to that wine to make it any different than that $50 bottle of wine? So organic wine, okay, I would sit there and say organic wine, that could be worth a pretty penny. Organic wine, and I'm not a winemaker. I don't sit here and make wine as a profession. I don't know how to make wine like a winemaker makes it, right? I run a wine business. And so I let somebody do that. That's their area of expertise. That's their passion is making the wine. An organic wine, the winemaker, they have to have their shit together twice as much as a normal winemaker. It is not easy to make wine that's organic and make it have a shelf life like normal wine has. When you start adding sulfites, you're automatically out of the organic wine phase because wine naturally has sulfites in it. But when you start adding additional sulfites, I don't think that classifies as organic wine anymore. In the future, I found out I'm going to start offering, it's going to be around $500 a bottle for this, for the wine in the future that I'm making. And the reason it's $500 a bottle, yep, it's damn good wine, but it's because I'm making every fucking thing for that wine. It's going to be an organic wine, which is extremely difficult to get your organic license to make a wine truly organic, but it will be an organic wine. But then I'll be making the decemmer out of wood, the crusher out of wood. I'll be making the barrel. I'll be making every single thing, the hoist, the dolly for moving the barrel. So I'm making every single thing for 1 to 2 barrels of wine a year, right? And yeah, that's going to be an expensive bottle of wine. That is a very specialized, you watched the entire process. You saw the grapes. That is a controlled as it gets process for a bottle of wine. Is that worth it to somebody to your mechanics? Fuck no.
No.
Never recommend a mechanic buying a $500 bottle of wine unless it's a very special occasion, right? But some people will buy these bottles of wine. Some people buy that expensive bottle of wine. Every week, they'll drink one of those. I like to save those for those real special occasions, right? Like, and if you're going to buy and you're going to spend that amount on it, you need to have a reason you're spending that amount on it. You need to be able to tell a story with that wine. You need to be able to do something other than just get intoxicated, right? You don't want to show up on, let's say, to a really prestigious event, or you don't want to show up on a date with a shitty bottle of wine. You know, and this is why guys, a lot of times, like, they have a hard time picking wines in grocery stores, because they're picking it from the grocery stores. But, like, if you're going to go on a date and you're going to bring a bottle of wine, isn't it the most awkward situation always, showing up with a bottle of wine that you don't really know,
right,
if this is any good or not? And you're waiting for someone, some wine snob, to sit there and talk shit or not open your bottle of wine. The world that I come from and that you guys come from, if someone brings something over to your house, you're going to say thank you and you're going to fucking open it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The world that I am in right now in the wine world, there's people that won't do that. And, you know, luckily I have the personality I have that I'll just, you know, I'll just be ridiculous, you know, make a scene essentially.
If you're not going to open it, I'm going to open it.
Yeah, 100%, right? But showing up, you want to show up with, like, okay, a decent wine. And then you can at least explain, this is why I like this wine. You know, I've tried it before. And if people don't like it, you don't take it personal, right? Because at the end of the day, a third of the people will like it, a third of the people won't like it, and a third of the people won't really care either way. It's an interesting world when you look at the reality behind it. But getting back to what's important with the wine is who you're drinking it with, who you're celebrating with, and then just finding out what you like. And I think that when you start getting into your $20-$30 bottles of wine, if you like sweet wine, then, you know, you might not be able to get away from that. But trying to just find something that you like the way it smells, you like the alcohol level to it, you can kind of taste, hey, how heavy that alcohol is. And then you like the finish. If you drink a bold red wine and it finishes quick, like, yeah, I like it to last a little bit longer in my mouth, maybe like 3 seconds in my mouth. But after that, like, I don't want to have that taste. You start, you know, smacking your gums and your tongue. Like, I don't want that leftover lingering taste in my mouth. So I do want some of a finish, but I don't want an extremely long one. And some people love that long finish. Some people don't want any finish. And so it's one of those things. You just got to find out what you like and then try and match that every time. But yeah, $1,000 bottle of wine. I can't sit there and say that it's got to be something real special. It's got to be something that you've seen the entire process. You're sure of it.
I don't know, that $500 bottle of wine, that's like what you break out to have with the sheep you killed on the governor's tag that you bought at auction, you know, or take it with you up on the mountain, whatever you're going to do.
And it depends. Like, for some people, I'm saying that's a $50 bottle of wine, right?
Right. Well, if you're buying a governor's tag, I think you can probably afford a $500 bottle of wine.
Yeah. I mean, there's not long ago that, you know, that's, and shoot, even currently to this day, like, there's things that I'm like, okay, I'm always trying to find the best bang for my buck. And when I sit there about trying to spend, I've seen dinners that are, you know, $2,000 for three people to eat. And I'm like, it's sickening to me, right? And whereas that might be normal for someone as a nice dinner, for me, that's just kind of ridiculous. And a $500 bottle of wine, that is ridiculous to a shit ton of people. Absolutely. And that's where that $50 bottle of wine, that's a good bottle. That's like, okay, that's fancy. And are you going to be able to taste the difference? Or you might prefer it, right? But, like, maybe not.
Is that $20 to $30 range? That's a sweet spot then for a blue-collared man like myself to kind of start and get a feel for what I like. When I have an idea, I might be able to find something in the $15 range or something like that that would also suit me. But that's a good place to start, where you're going to get a lot of different You're going to find quality wines in that range pretty easily.
100%. There's so many good wines out there, and you know, I'll open up a bottle, you know, Josh Wines. That's a big brand. And the reason why I started drinking Josh Wines wasn't because of the way the wine tasted at all. It was because I read the story and I was like, hey, that's something that resonates with me. This company, you know, it's about Josh as the dad who's no longer alive to the guy who's running it now. And this is a commemorative, you know, kind of company in his honor. And I was like, oh, that's pretty neat. I love that. And so, you know, I found out the way that I start drinking wines and getting to know them is like, if I can stand behind that company and what it stands for, if we have the same values, then hell yes, I'll drink that and I'll support it. There's so many companies out there, whiskey companies too, right? There's a lot of whiskey companies. I love drinking 10th Mountain whiskey because I know the owner, I know what they're about, I know who they support. And at the end of the day, it's a damn good whiskey, but also I know my money is going towards this country in a good way.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of these, I'm not going to compare my brand to other wine brands because there's a lot of different great wine brands out there. But I know that, you know, I like to speak the truth. I like to give people what they deserve. And then it comes down to customer service, really, right? Give them a damn good wine. When they pick up the phone and they call the Woodsman Selection, they're getting me. They're going to get me as long as I can still answer the phone. Yeah. Right. And, if I'm busy, okay, you might get somebody else, but I go back to those old school, traditions and those old school way of business to where your word means something. You need to be able to talk to people on the phone. Nothing pisses me off more than calling up a company and getting an automated voice recording. So, starting off that $15, $20 range, you know, $20 to $30, that's the higher end in a grocery store. But start off there and go through them and see what you like. And then from there, like, you can either stick with it or just continuously try new things.
So when you and I talked on the phone briefly a few weeks ago, you had mentioned some newly discovered history with wine and winemaking in your family. If you could cover that a little bit, kind of your backstory, how you got into wine and how you found out about that you were not the first.
So you know, I started this wine company as a means to be able to spend more time with my son, to be able to have a product, right, instead of a service. I was really running myself thin, running all over the world, teaching people these things. And I was like, okay, how can I still have the same passion for getting people into the outdoors, but not have to be there in person? So I started, and I loved wine. So, you know, I've got a pretty cool background as far as if you look at it from like a manly perspective. You got the recon background, the sniper background, a hunter, and survival, blah, 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 blah. But because I've done these hard things and had it rough in life, I'm able to sit there and pick up a glass of wine and enjoy it and not have to, and I don't have to act like that manly persona. I'm just fucking it. I like doing manly shit, but at the same time, when I drink my coffee, I put fucking creamer in it and I don't give a shit what anybody has to say. Right. That's the way I like my coffee.
Right.
And so, whenever I talk to my kid, I talk to my kid with a little voice and I'm all cute about it. I don't care. Right. Because I'm not here to act like a man. I'm just here to be me. And at the end of the day, like, I started this wine brand to be able to spend more time with my kid, and my last name, it had nothing to do with where I came from or my family history. And I haven't really cared about my last name ever in life. You know, 38 years old today, and like, not today, but you know, right now I'm 38 years old, and I've never looked at my last name and really had any appreciation for it until recently. So about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I found out that my great-grandfather had been making wine for about 50 years. And I was like, hold up. How has nobody in my family told me this shit yet? And so it got even better. I then started getting all this information about my great-grandfather and my grandfather. My great-grandfather was in World War I, fighting for the Italians. And he was one of two guys that survived this insane battle. Made it out alive. Everybody else died. And there's this whole article write-up. It's about 3 pages long. And, you know, he went from there, served his brother's tour, because back then in Italy, you had to serve your time. If you were a military age male, you had to serve your time, and then you could go live your life. And so he served his brother's time, he served his time, and then he moved to America in 1921. The other brothers that he served the time for, one of them, died of the Spanish flu in like 1917 in America. But he got here, 1921, started making wine, I think in the early 1930s. He had my grandfather, who, you know, so my great-grandfather came over here, and he was a WOP, right? You guys ever heard Italians called WOPs?
Yep, without papers.
Yeah, nailed it, without papers. So I didn't even know that shit until recently. He came over here without papers, and then he had a son, and my grandfather ended up joining the Marine Corps. And I think that's the coolest shit ever, because if you are going to immigrate over here, like, join the fucking country, join the service is one of the best ways to show that you're devoted to this country now.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he joined the Marine Corps, was in World War II, found out some really neat information about that. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking back at my family history, and I've got my great grandfather in World War I. And then I got my grandfather in World War II. My dad, he didn't do anything in the military. So it skipped a generation, went down to me. And then I'm sitting there and I joined the Marine Corps, not knowing that my grandfather was in the Marine Corps. Found that out afterwards. I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. It's pretty neat. I like that. And then I started a wine business, not knowing that my great grandfather had been making wine, and he had a wine called Father John's Medicine. This wasn't a business. This was a passion for sure.
Well, in the
he
time...
would take the grapes, take the boxes of grapes. They'd carry them down in the basement. They'd crush them old school style. They'd destem them. They'd crush them. They'd make wine to drink in, you know, small barrels. But that process lasted for 50 years. And so they're not labeling these things, right? These aren't labeled like they are professionally to sell, but they would call it Father John's Medicine. And so in my great grandfather's, you know, like honor, you know, I felt the need that I was like, hey, I'm going to make the wine like he made it. I'm going to make the tools that he used to make it with. And you know what? I'm going to make 1 to 2 barrels a year. And I don't know what I'll call it yet. I don't know if I'll dedicate it to the last name, D'Ambrosio, or if I'll try and figure out a way around the government to call it Father John's Medicine. But, you know, you can't really put medicine on a bottle of alcohol. So.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, it's funny. In the time period he was making wine, he probably needed to call it medicine because, I mean, that's pretty much the only way they were passing off alcohol at that time was, oh, it's medicine. You know, that's prohibition time period.
Yeah,
he's exactly. Making medicine, all right.
Yeah. So, you know, I found out that information. I was like, okay, that's pretty damn neat. I like that. And and that's why, you know, that bottle of wine, that's why I'm like, okay. For people, you know, that's more of a thing for me than anything. But just passing down that, you know, that special, extremely special bottle of wine. So if you want to see the grapes that were put into that wine, you'll see it. You'll see the entire process. That'll be on social media, right? And you'll be able to drink that bottle of wine and then validate, look, this is how this exact batch of wine was made. And, you know, I think that's pretty neat because I'm never going to make it in mass production for, you know, something like that. That's the $20, $30 bottles.
Right.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's interesting. My wife and I, she prefers a wine from a vineyard here, and I would, the guy who owns the winery, he is a logger, and so he actively is logging, and how I found out about him was I was delivering fuel to his logging operation, and which is in the middle of his vineyard. And so then they've got a tasting room and all that. We went in and tried it, and she found her favorite champagne there, or sparkling wine. But it was just really interesting. We never would have tried it, you know, except for I know who he was, and he was a blue-collar guy, and I liked him as a man. And so then we tried his wine and ended up liking that too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing, that the people in the, you know, in the wine world. So I went to SHOT Show this year, and it was a nice break. You know, I'm making a long gun for a company called Watchtower Firearms right now, and so they brought me to SHOT Show with them, and it took me like 5 minutes to be like, oh, I'm with my people again, finally. You know, like, I could breathe. And I was trying to explain to the guys there that work there, you know, some guys would bitch and moan about their jobs, and I'm like, you shut your mouth right now. Everybody that you're working around, these are good people.
100%. So we've talked about a lot about, you know, your wine is for the outdoorsman, but two things that don't really go together are the great outdoors and glass containers, but you have, or you're coming out with a fix for that.
Yeah, I was about a year and a half ago, you know, I'm sitting there and I'd made my, this company is only about, I've only been selling wine for less than 2 years actually. But, so everything's growing pretty fast, but I came out with the first four bottles, and they were in these glass containers, and these are nice bottles of wine, the premium bottles of wine. And I was like, man, I'd really like to find a way to get a lower cost wine to the everyday person out there. That's a damn good bottle of wine, but, you know, more affordable. But I don't want it just to be like everybody else. Everybody keeps it affordable by putting in a glass bottle, slapping a label on it, putting a cork in there, and then they change the cost of the wine. But for me, I was like, nah, I got to give them something else, something that makes sense with this brand. And I found the first ever 750 milliliter Bordeaux shaped aluminum bottle. And I was like, okay, well, hold on. And I started doing some research and looking into it. And I realized that this is a much better option to put my wine into for those everyday wine drinkers, for the people that want to go out there, take it into the backcountry. You don't have to worry about breaking glass. You can take it to concerts. You can take it to beaches. You can take it to all the places you're not allowed to take glass. You can take this bottle of wine. And you're not having to rely on some wine that you don't know. You're not having to, you can bring something that is trusted to this special event that you're going to. And, you know, it's allowed in there. National parks. So these aluminum containers, it's so funny. I just had to deal with it on Monday. I had someone come up to me and they were like, yeah, but wine, it ruins the coating of aluminum in the bottle. And I'm like, stop right now. Like, in the cans, can the acidity eat through that coating? Sure. Absolutely. Like, if wine's been in there for a long time, and it can eat through, especially if the wine's not made properly. If it's super acidic, it can definitely eat through. But there's things that you can do to wine, and the coatings that they have now, they're different. They're not these lighter coatings that they're putting in this bottle specifically. So this is meant for wine. And so right now we're at 15 months of testing this wine and zero change in taste and quality. And so at the end of the day, I tell people, I'm like, hey, buy a bottle of this wine. You're not going to buy this aluminum bottle of wine and put it on your shelf and keep it for 4 years. If you want to do that, then buy a glass bottle of wine. Absolutely. If you're trying to buy something for tonight, tomorrow, next month, you're going on a fishing trip in 6 months, then that's where this aluminum bottle comes in. It is meant to take into the outdoors. And then best thing about it is it takes half the amount of energy to recycle this than glass does. So glass is the biggest carbon footprint in the wine industry. And as I look at this and I go, okay, I love the outdoors. I'm always trying to do things to make this planet a little bit better. But like, I'm not going to do something that's counterintuitive, like an electric fucking vehicle, right? Right. So I'm not going to do that. But what I will do is put wine into a container that a lot of people are like, oh, I don't know about this, and then let them make their own decision. And then let them open up that bottle and be like, damn, all right, that's just as good as the glass bottle. And so I am that comes out. It's out now, actually. It just came out, and, you know, it'll be up on the website probably next week. But, like, this bottle of wine I've been working on for a year and a half. I'm super excited about it because it embodies everything that the Woodsman Selection is about, and it keeps it simple. And, it, you know, for those bougie wine drinkers out there, if you don't want – it's so funny. The investor's mom actually liked the aluminum bottle because she keeps her wine in one of those aluminum containers, right, when she travels and stuff, right. She'll put it in. And I was like, that's interesting, because usually the bougie people are the one that are looking at aluminum and be like, no. But maybe it's because it looked like a wine bottle and looked fancy to her. So I don't know.
I don't know. The blue-collar guy in me who knows absolutely next to nothing about wine and also absolutely next to nothing about elk hunting, but I've seen pictures of a bugle tube. I'm wondering if I can take this aluminum bottle to a bandsaw, cut the bottom off of it after I'm done with it, and wondering how good of a bugle tube your aluminum wine bottle would make.
Oh, you know what? That's interesting. I didn't think about that. The thing that came to my mind first is like, okay, I can boil water in it, right?
Hell yeah.
Get out there and bring this and celebrate, put an elk down, cut off some backstrap when you get back to camp, cook up some backstrap, have some wine. Hell yes. Celebrate that way. The bugle tube, that'd be interesting. That'd be cool, right, for me to do that, and anybody else that wants to try and do it. You know what I've done before that I really liked with elk hunting is 2 years ago, I ripped out the throat of an elk that I shot, and I used that as my bugle tube. And so I'm like, just wait up. I like doing stuff like that. The bottle, it's got the same shape, you know?
Yeah, I'm looking, you know, like I said, I've seen pictures of a bugle tube, and I think about the shape of a wine bottle. And I know that some bugle tubes are made of plastic. Some of the nicer ones are made of aluminum. And I'm like, well, if you got an aluminum wine bottle, you would need a fairly you could do it with a hacksaw. I don't know that I'd try it with a sawzall. You do it with a pretty jagged end. Unless you've got a super steady hand with a sawzall. I do not.
But you know what? I'll do this. I'll try it out later tonight, and I'll let you know. Because I'll cut it open one, and I'll get my read out, and I'll see how it goes. But, like, yeah, the mouth diameter of that is literally probably the same exact size of bugle tube.
Yeah.
It's very close to that. But, you know, that mindset right there, that's the mindset that I love, is you're taking something and you're using it for multiple things, and you're not getting caught up in, hey, I've got to have a, oh, shit. Just give me a brand for a bugle tube. What's that one everybody's using?
Tyke, what do you got?
I forgot, but like, I don't need to have that special brand bugle tube out there that costs $50. I can use just about anything. And if the best things in life are to use things that you're adapting, and you're using something that's not intended for that. And so, you know, I do archery elk in Colorado every year. And this year I'm like, come on, I got to bring in a bull, and I want to use my own voice. And I just want to do like a mouth call, cow call. Or, you know, the bugle tube that I ripped out of a different bull's throat, and, you know, with a reed that I have. But that's the kind of stuff that's kind of like this wine brand, is where, like, you know, you don't need to be bougie about it. You don't need to spend a lot of money on something. You just be out there enjoying this stuff.
Well, that fits kind of into your multi-purpose, the adventures you've got going along with the different bottles of wine to begin with. I mean, you look at all your bottles of wine, your hunter has the bullet on it, the the hunter does, and then you've got the archer with the arrowhead, and then the the fisherman, and you're red with the axe, which I think that's a piece of flint on there.
Yeah, it's a ferrocerium rod, so you can, you know, and people see that and they lose their minds, because, you know, I start a fire with the wine bottle and it takes half a second and they're like, what? Yeah. Right? So, the angler's got the fishing line and the woolly booger fly, and that's caught just about every fish that eats other fish around the world on it. And so it's like, yeah, people look at it and they might be at first, they're like, oh, it's kind of gimmicky. But then when they go out there and they catch a damn fish with it, they're like, that shit's cool, right? Yeah. When they start a fire with it, like, that shit's cool right there. I had my buddy Donnie Dust, who's on season 6 of Alone. I had him make an arrow with the archer, because it's a flint-napped arrowhead on it. It's got the sinew. You got the two hardest parts, you know. All you got to have is straighten out a relatively straight shaft and put some fletchings on there, whether that's feathers or duct tape. Get some fletchings on there, and then you got yourself a damn arrow. And then if you run out of that, break the bottle open and, you know, nap your own arrowhead out of the glass. But, you know, I have that survival mindset. I have that, you know, try and do the most with the least. I enjoy that. That's our saying, you know, as a recon Marine, is you're not part of SOCOM as a recon Marine. You're not part of special operations. You're conducting special operations, but you're not part of it. And we would always do the most with the least. We didn't get that special operation paycheck. We got really great training, but not at the level like SEALs did, right? And so, but we were expected to go out there and do similar shit, 90% of it, to what they're doing. And I'm like, all right, I love that. I love not having the budget and then making it happen anyways. It's way more rewarding than having something just kind of handed to you. So,
what caliber bullet's in the hunter?
What's that?
What caliber bullet is in the hunter? In case you
get it's a 30 cal.
30?
Yeah.
And reload it.
It's 175 grain 30 cal. Okay. And if that changes, I'll need to let people know. But you can reload it. It's a nozzler. So it's a damn good projectile. It's not just some cheap projectile that's on these bottles, but. Yeah, nozzler, 30 cal, 175 grain, and that's like kind of, okay, I got to take game with that, right? I've got to load it. I got to take my wine, drink it, take the projectile, put it into a casing with some powder and a primer, and put it together and go kill like a world record elk with it or something. I don't know.
Yep, I agree. That's cool that you can kind of repurpose that stuff. I like that you thought about that and built it in to the whole brand. That's really cool.
Yeah,
well, that's the big thing that to me as an outdoorsman that speaks to me. It's more than just a bottle of wine. I connect with it better because there are things that I recognize from other things that I enjoy on the bottle: the bullet, the arrowhead, the ferro rod, all that type of stuff. And that you know, looking through your website, it's kind of what drew me to contact you. It's like this. It's not just wine. It's cool wine, if that makes any sense. You know, it just seems different. It looking at wine in the, well, I mean, I'm a gimmick for good marketing. Your marketing got me as an outdoorsman, because you look at a bottle of wine in the grocery store, it's definitely not marketed to me.
Yeah.
But looking at your website, that stuff is more in my purview as an outdoorsman to see something like that on a bottle of wine. So it was interesting.
And, you know, there's a lot more people out there. You know, the safe way of starting a wine business is to go out there and make a brand that is very safe. This is not a safe brand. Like, you know, I piss a lot of people off with my wine brand, right? And at the end of the day, I don't give a shit. I'm sorry. If you're offended by my bottles, or if you're offended by a bullet, go fuck yourself and get out of my country, right? Like, that's the way I feel about people that don't like the Second Amendment. I'm like, you obviously don't know your history, but, like, that's the bad side of me in business. But the reality is, I started this business not to appease people and make a lot of money. I started this business to be able to get the everyday person that has been – kind of steered away or kind of hesitant to drink wine because of that pretentiousness that comes with it. They're like, hey, I don't want to be a part of that. And I want them to understand and enjoy wine and know that, hey, you don't have to know anything about it. You don't have to sit there and know what to say. You can just sit there, open it, let everybody else talk, and drink it.
Right.
And then make your own assumptions of whether or not you like it or not. And if all you do is you drink a bottle of wine, you're like, yeah, that's good. I like it. Then hell yeah. That's all you need to be able to say, right?
Right.
Drink it, you don't like it, but like, I don't like it. Why do you not like it? I don't know. It doesn't matter. I don't like it, right? But just keeping it simple. So
what's the date you're expecting to have the aluminum bottle available on your website?
So May 20th, it'll be up and running on the website, May 20th.
So by the time this comes out, like, you'll be able to hear it. If you're listening to it the day it drops, you'll be able to pick it up off the website that Friday.
Yep.
Somewhere around there. So it's just dropping out the 15th of May. So,
What are you planning on dropping, the 13th?
13th of May. So the following Monday.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so, you know, I've got to run down there and make a special run to California to pick this stuff up. My bottler was a little behind schedule, but that's fine. It all has to ship out when it's the online stuff. It ships out from here. I don't ship to California right now. I know out of all the states, it's kind of one of the crazy ones I should ship to, but I don't ship to California. And then there's like four other states that I don't ship to, but just about every state out there I can ship to.
They'd probably make you take the bullet off that bottle anyway if you sent it to California, yeah. You know.
No comment.
No comment, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and if somebody wants free shipping, four bottles or more get some free shipping. That's kind of one of the hard things when you're lowering the price of your wine. Shipping wine, it's not cheap. You know, and so I try to make sure I can find a way for free shipping. But, you know, if you buy one bottle of wine that's $30, you may pay another $20, $25 just to ship it to where you live.
Right.
And so when you order, you know, four bottles of wine or more, at least I always tell people just to wait until they can. Makes it easier.
So is it available in stores anywhere or just on the internet?
Yeah, so it'll be in just about all of Montana, Oregon, all of Oregon, Safeway, Albertsons right now, Washington, some of the grocery stores in Washington, Safeway and Albertsons in Washington. But we just, you know, I got it into these three states without them even trying the wine, right?
Right.
I've tried the wine. I know what it tastes like, but to get it into these states without them trying the wine was pretty impressive, and it was pretty quick. And so it'll be in a hell of a lot more states real soon. As soon as I get this wine in my hand and I can actually start sending it to these distributors and some of these grocery store chains, then they can start bringing it in.
Oh, the company is young, you know, you've got plenty of time to get it. I mean, like you said, you've been at it, what, just over 2 years?
Yeah. And, you know, I went from putting it into a bottle to getting into my first grocery store within 6 months. And I thought that was super neat. And in the wine world, wineries hate selling to the grocery stores. You lose a metric fuck ton when it comes to having to pay distributor costs, right, having to pay the retailers. You lose a lot. And so, you know, doing online sales is much better, more profitable. But at the end of the day, once again, I want to get this to the masses of people. I want them, you know, out there drinking this wine kind of as a, hey, this is what I stand for. This is who I am. This is a brand I can get behind. And, you know, that's more important to me. So I did a little bit backwards. I started going retail before I really started concentrating on online, but I love it. It's new. There's wine brands out there that have been open for 20 years that have never gotten into a grocery store and with a distributor. And so I'm very fortunate and blessed to get in with the people I've gotten in with and to, you know, get where I am even just today. So
yeah, that's like, you know, I've got to point out to our listeners, like we said, your company is young, and as we sit here at the table in the podcast. I've got a nice Yingling lager sitting here, and they tout themselves as the oldest brewery in America, yet you still can't get that in quite a few states. That's one of the first things we had to put in Tyke's hands when he got off the plane here in Florida, because he hadn't had a Yingling in quite some time. Can't get him in California.
Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah. So. But, man, I thank you for joining us. You got any closing thoughts?
Yeah. Pick up a bottle of wine. Try it. See what you like. Don't be bougie about it. Put it into a fucking solo cup if you need to. And, you know, like, just enjoy the damn wine. And at the end of the day, like, you know, find something that you want to support and you believe in, and then get into the outdoors and do that with your family and friends. And then as long as you do that, like, that's a life worth living right there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting some of this wine in my hands and then giving it a try. We'll have to when we finally get some here, we'll bring it back up on the podcast, because I'm sure we'll sit in here with a nice wild game meal of some kind and enjoy that with it and talk a little bit there about it. Go. We actually get to taste it. So,
yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on.
I think you've talked me into it. I'll probably start my journey down trying some different wines and stuff. I've always avoided it. I didn't know enough about it. So I think you've given me some stuff to work with here, and I'm definitely going to – I don't think I'm going to be a wino, but probably still primarily beer, but I definitely do want to get into the wine realm. It's a whole different world, it sounds like, and it something that just now you've got kind of piqued my interest. I want to see what you see in it.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, Mark, thank you for joining us, man. I had a great time, and it was good talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. You have a good night.
You too.
As always, we thank you guys so much for being part of the Under Pressure Outdoors family and hope you enjoyed the show. If you'd like to help us out, first and foremost, if you haven't already, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and tell us what you like about the show. If you want exclusive access to hunts and the ins and outs of specific WMAs and why we choose to hunt there and a lot of other sweet stuff we have planned, join our Patreon. So far on the docket for this year, we'll be hosting 2 whitetail camps and 2 small game hunts at a minimum. Plus, you'll get a sweet discount code to save when you shop the UPO Nation website, as well as get early access and discounts on future events. It's $5 a month, and it'll pretty much pay for itself. As always, if you have any questions you'd like answered on the show, reach out to us on social media or at underpressureoutdoors@gmail.com. We'll catch you guys next week.